I'm Christian Perez, and this is Modernity and Absurdity. Peter Jacob was the Democratic candidate for New Jersey's 7th Congressional District in the 2016 election. A social worker by trade, Peter was inspired to run for office by Senator Bernie Sanders. Through hard work and perseverance, Peter has carved out a place for himself among New Jersey's top progressive leaders. Unlike so many of his Democratic peers, Peter remains unbought by corporate money and unafraid to speak truth to power. Peter is a fighter for New Jersey's forgotten voices and can be found speaking at any number of events throughout the state. With support from within his district as well as throughout the state of New Jersey, Peter stands out in New Jersey politics as an inspiring politician that doesn't hide behind empty platitudes and rhetoric. Unlike so many politicians today, Peter fights for the little guy and not corporate donors. In the run-up to the 2018 election, Peter faced a powerful primary challenger and former Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor under President Obama, Tom Malinowski. Malinowski, with support from a Democratic Party hostile to progressive agenda and a number of other primary candidates meant to confuse the electorate, proved successful. Despite this loss, Peter pushes forward, building on his legacy of honesty and hard work. All right, so how are you doing today, Peter?
Doing well, doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad that you could come here and do this interview with me. You're a good friend, and I'm glad we could sit down and do this. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking anyway. We might as well record it and see if anybody wants to listen to what you have to say. They don't care what I have to say.
Indeed, bro. It's a long time coming, and I was looking forward to this. Glad we finally got to do this.
Good. Definitely. So how are you spending your time? Still keeping busy?
Indeed. You know, doing the same old just to keep gas in the car, food in the belly, and use it for hangout time, working with my father.
Yeah,
I got my dog.
Oh,
you know,
Savannah.
She keeps me very busy and keeps me fit to a degree.
There you go.
Playing my drums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But still active and still involved. You know, you try and take a break, quote unquote, from politics, but it keeps pulling you back. And at this hour in our American history, it's much needed. So, you know, wherever anybody asks me to come out, speak, to support, you know, I go ahead and believe in those people who are about that cause for progressive values, for actual progressive values.
I see it. I mean, your Facebook page, it never stops. There's always something going on. There's always something insightful. The campaign ended, but Peter Jacob didn't end. I think that that's something that sets you apart from a lot of different people. But let me ask you this. So this is the big question, right? When did you decide that you wanted to run for office? Was there an actual moment? What was it like? What made you say, you know what, I want to run? Was it something in the news, personal experience?
I'll start out by saying this. I never wanted to really run for office.
Okay.
It just was something that evolved in me. And at some point I was like, you know what, it is my responsibility as a human being, as a social worker, to run for public office. You know, I always looked up to the philosophers, religious leaders of antiquity, great leaders like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and what were they about? They were about grassroots.
Absolutely.
Change came from the bottom up, and that's the kind of work that I always saw myself doing. And as a social worker serving in the city of Elizabeth and greater Union County, you see the challenges firsthand. And this was 2 years after the recession. And after we elected Barack Obama, we're wishing for some hope and change.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that hope and change was
still waiting.
Yeah, still waiting to this day. And, you know, for me, enough was enough. I saw Senator Bernie Sanders, and if he could do it without a super PAC, running on the values that I could testify to as a social worker, then it is my responsibility to run for public office. And that's what I did.
We're actually going to come back to Senator Sanders in a moment, because I think he's probably arguably your greatest influence at this point, at least politically. He's the most popular politician in the country today, bar none, and it's definitely a goodie. There will always be critique from the left and the far left about engaging in electoral politics. Social media, I'm constantly butting heads with people on social media about the importance of voting, about the importance of getting involved. But the leftist critique of electoral politics does carry some credibility. Your own experience with the Democratic Party can be used as an example to highlight this supposed futility of trying to deal with the system. Is this something that you spent time thinking about, or did you never really have any problems with electoral politics? Do you see it as practical, or do you see it as idealistic? Do you see it as making a deal with the machine? How do you see it?
Sometimes it's all of the above. And, you know, we need a complete strategy from the outside and inside. Speaking to the Democratic Party, or, you know, you need people on the outside putting pressure. You need people to always promote those progressive values on the inside of the party as well as the outside. And again, all change that we saw in our nation, in our world, came from the bottom up. Yeah. Right. The greatest
power concedes nothing without a demand.
Exactly. And power only concedes to fear. Fear of the masses. Yeah. You know, as the famous saying goes, people should not be afraid of their governments. Government should be.
A great poet once said. Indeed. A great scholar once. Yeah.
By the name of V.
So why didn't you go the traditional route to run for office? I was listening to a really good interview with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she said that. You know, they asked her the same thing. You know, why not go the traditional route? Why didn't you start with the school board or the city council, local politics, like so many other people? What made you decide to jump right into running for Congress?
I think that's a great question, because it's one that I often get. People say, hey, why don't you move up the ladder? Why don't you get some experience? Isn't Congress quite a leap? Why not start at the city council or school board or something like that? How many people have started like that, and where is our nation now?
Yeah.
Look at how many politicians with their years of experience, and yet our approval rating for Congress is in the teens.
Yeah.
Governors across our nation are completely failing our nation. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we need broad, brave ideas. And the people who are bringing that are people from other areas. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson pointed out very well once, you know, where are the scientists in politics? You know, so I'd say, where are the social workers? Where's the nurses? Where are the teachers? You know, where's the rest of life being represented?
Yeah.
And we're right at this moment in American history, we're at a critical space where it could become complete doom for our nation. This
Absolutely.
Is the end of empire, literally. You know, Donald Trump
capitalism.
Late stage capitalism. And Donald Trump, you know, he is just a symptom of a larger problem. Yeah, you could cut out that disease, that cancer called Donald Trump, but the problems will continue to persist. And that problem is called neoliberalism.
Yeah.
And so if we do not have people willing to lead and fight and serve in public office who are going to reflect these values, then I don't see a future for America, sadly to say. So I think it's very important for people who have the ability, both financially, spiritually, I'll add also mentally and emotionally,
Absolutely.
To run for office, to actually run for office, no matter where that is. I also say that, you know, in a state like New Jersey, where you have such machine politics, where the Democratic Party is very strong, in the sense that there's a lot of money in the state of New Jersey.
Yes.
And sometimes it is easier to run for something like Congress than it is to even run for a school board or a town council.
That's interesting.
Or even a county commissioner, or what we call freeholders, or some people call
freeholders. I think they recently just changed it. Yeah, they just changed it back to county commissions for the first time. But yeah, I mean, freeholders are an old, outdated
term. Yeah, yeah.
Nobody in the country uses it except for us.
Nobody uses it, and it has to do with, you know, people owning land and things like that. We're
freeholders. You had to have 50 pounds worth of gold, as in British pounds, and a, quote, freehold of land. So you had to have money and you had to have land. Otherwise, you couldn't vote and you weren't anybody. So that meant women, immigrants, and poor dudes were out the door.
Yep, indeed. And that's why they call them freeloaders as well, if you don't like them. And so it's easier to run for Congress because ultimately, the power base is in county government. These are $500 million contracts sometimes, some places even more. You could imagine in Essex County or some other places. And when you got that amount of money, unlike Mississippi, you know, you're not dependent on the federal government to bring in money.
Yeah.
You just got your cash within your county. You know, that's your state assembly people, your state senator bringing that money in, all the contracts and all that stuff. And that's why sometimes it's easier to run for Congress and be that inspirational voice. And however unfortunate, the people pay attention more to what's happening nationally than locally.
Yeah.
So if you could be that voice at the national level. And when we ran, there was nobody else really speaking to those progressive values as we went into the general election.
Yeah.
As a candidate, speaking to those, you know, I don't like the isms here, but, you know, those progressivism, that kind of left kind of politics that the Democratic Party was once actually representative of.
It's under there somewhere. We just got to dig it out.
Indeed.
A comment on the whole traditional thing for office. Look who our president is, mm-hmm. right? I mean, what was his preparation for being president? Running a bunch of crooked companies, being a D-actor in movies nobody wants to watch anymore?
Indeed, he's a reality TV star whose greatest business skill is bankruptcy, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I don't know why I engage with these people on Facebook, but you can't argue with ignorance. You can't. I mean, people are clinging on to Trump like a sinking ship, and you know, they just don't get it. They just only see him, and come hell or high water, they're ready to deal with it.
Yeah. And I say this, you know, people focus on people, places, or things.
Yeah,
a person is an easy target.
Mm-hmm.
A thing like WikiLeaks is an easy target. Mm-hmm. A place like Russia is an easy target.
Absolutely.
And what we need to get to and understand are the ideas. This idea of free market capitalism, neoliberalism, and its impact. And that's the kind of direction I'm trying to take people. We're at an opportune time to educate individuals. People are at that space right now where I was about a decade ago. You know, when we were in college, the big thing was George W. Bush, let's impeach him. He got us into this ridiculous war in Iraq, especially on false pretenses. Let's get him out. We need to elect every Democrat possible.
Yeah.
06, 08, and then what happened?
Yeah.
Now we're stuck with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So it's not enough to get any kind of Democrat in. We need a progressive in there. And ones who talk about the issues and who are willing to educate America and take that role seriously by being a leader, serving the people.
Not all Democrats are created equal. That's a reality. And I think that's something that you were really good at hitting home. You know, there's a difference between a Peter Jacob and a Phil Murphy or a Hillary Clinton or a Barack. I mean, other than the fact that they have millions of dollars and you don't, but there's a lot of other differences. Here's a question I really want to ask, and it's something I've been dying to ask you. What did it feel like having local Democratic party bosses, local Democratic offices drag their feet with you and your campaign? You had a lot of support. You had a lot of small donations. You have people that believe in you all throughout the 7th District and outside, of course. What's it like to have that support, to have the nomination, and to still have these people dragging their feet, hemming and hawing along the way?
Disappointing. Sad. Frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is, when I started running, or I was thinking about running in late 2015, you know, I sent messages to some of the county chairs. You know, again, county government in the state of New Jersey has a lot of influence because you got a lot of money in contracts that
Absolutely.
You're dealing with. And that's their bread and butter. That's what they care about. But here was an opportunity. 2016, people are energized. Millennials want to come out and vote. You saw this guy, Bernie Sanders, and what he was doing. So I sent a message out to pretty much all the chairs. Hey, I'm interested in meeting and chatting because I'm running for U.S. Congress. You know, I respect process. You know, I respect people and their positions and their roles. So, you know, I'm supporting Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm planning to run for U.S. Congress, and I want to run for U.S. Congress in our district. Could we chat sometime? Didn't get any messages back.
Mm.
You know, we got into 2016, and then people, you know, finally responded after that 50,000 email that I sent.
They couldn't deny you, bro.
Yeah. And so it wasn't, you know, anything I'd say that was you expect them to welcome you with open arms. Here's a young, progressive, millennial, social worker.
Man of color in America.
Person of color in America, willing to take up this mantle in a place that many people are not willing to run.
Yeah.
And we saw the writing on the wall. You know, we saw what was coming down the pipeline with Donald Trump.
Yes, we did. We saw it 10 years ago, Peter. Yeah.
And here was a clear opportunity to flip our district based on the numbers. And we presented all these facts to them and the data. Said we could win. And
It was what it was.
Yeah, it was what it was. And Senator Sanders and the progressives throughout America had faith in us. And those are the people I'm appreciative towards.
The reality of the situation is those that are in the know who helped you and know who didn't help you. And yep. Those that didn't help you are going to have to live with that. I mean, as you said, we are in a dark time for the United States of America. And these are people that actively decided that they didn't want to do what's best for New Jersey and for our country. And it's a shame, and shame on them, truthfully. You wouldn't be willing to name names, would you? You don't have to. Can the Democratic Party be saved?
Yes, I believe so, with the right people. I'm not here for the house that they built, that the third way Democrats built. I'm here for the land it was built on. You know, the Democratic Party, once upon a time, was the party of the KKK.
It was.
And then what happened? Martin Luther King and others pulled it to the left.
Pulled it to the left.
And you have someone like, you know, and once upon a time, Democrats were what we consider Republicans.
Yeah.
They opposed Lincoln when it came to the issue of...
Republicans were the party of the North.
Yeah, yep. Putting an end to slavery. And if we see what happened... at the Depression. You fast forward roughly 80 years from Lincoln to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the Great Depression. You know, the Republicans in the Roaring Twenties sunk us into quite a grave, leading to the financial collapse of 1929, Black Tuesday. Then we had FDR come along. And
that led to fascism.
Yep.
Great Depression is what created the Nazis.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And there was two routes that America could have gone. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have gone that...
We were very close to going that other route.
Yep, where, you know, we saw Mussolini in Italy, Franco in Spain, and Hitler in Germany. We could have easily went that route.
Yeah. But England was very much going that way. Churchill was a fascist sympathizer, but ultimately it's about power, and he realized the British didn't want the British to subjugate themselves.
Yeah. And fortunately, the American people, they... selected Franklin Roosevelt, and he came in with a bold, brave strategy. His famous 100 days put people to work, created jobs, a federal jobs program, social security, unemployment insurance. He did what needed to be done. Now, it was imperfect. It excluded a lot of black people.
People of color, yeah. Latinos in the color, North, yep. Southern agricultural workers, absolutely.
Indeed. And but it laid a platform for the nation at large. And within his fourth term, he put forward the second Bill of Rights, which said we need a right to health care, we need a right to housing, a right to employment and gainful employment, a right to education, and a right to be free from unfair competition and monopolies. And unfortunately, he passed away, and so did that second Bill of Rights. And then came along MLK and other leaders who actually had the opportunity to meet with Franklin Roosevelt, like A. Philip Randolph, who put forward a new freedom budget, which echoed those same sentiments. And then Kennedy was assassinated. LBJ put us into a war, not being able to see the Great Society, which was the continuation of the New Deal in the 60s. And then the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. And then we see the Democratic Party change its complete strategy towards one that is more conservative economically. And we see the deregulation of Wall Street. We see a ridiculous amount of people of color, especially blacks, being thrown into prison, their benefits and all that stuff taken away. And then we see something like NAFTA pass, which devastated, you know, labor and people working in manufacturing industries and things like that. So we see all this come about in the 90s, and then we are feeling its effects to this day. And then as a result, we shouldn't be surprised that we get somebody like Donald Trump who comes along and promises to bring back jobs, says he's going to protect Social Security and Medicare, and whatnot. So the Democratic Party, if it focuses on the issues that most Americans support, you know, healthcare as a human right, and that means a Medicare for all single payer system. If we talk about what we've already done, what Lincoln did with land-grant colleges, tuition-free public colleges and universities and trade schools in this country. If we do those things, which are very popular with 60% plus approval ratings in this country, then the Democratic Party, if it returns to its original New Deal, Great Society roots, could recaptivate the country. But again, we need those leaders who speak about those issues.
I want to take a step back because you made a comment that you kind of brushed by, and it's just something I want to stop and acknowledge. So FDR was not perfect. The New Deal was not perfect. It was very much far from it. But you made a comment. You said FDR was elected how many times? He was elected four times. So there's this revisionist history in the 21st century that the New Deal was a failure, that it didn't do this, it didn't do that. But Roosevelt was popular enough to be elected four times. The only thing that stopped him was death, right? Yep. The Republicans couldn't stop him. Nobody could stop him. That's a lot of power. So I want everyone out there to think about that when the revisionists start talking about how big of a failure the New Deal was. It was the most arguably one of the most successful pieces of legislation, one of the most successful acts by the government in our history, arguably the 20th century. It built a new world.
50 years of progress and prosperity for our nation, arguably the reason my family and many others came to this country and had the opportunity to start small businesses, to invest, for someone like myself to even run for office.
Yeah, it was about the American dream. And as I said, we always have to bring up its faults, but it's something we could look to as a stepping stone, a place to start in the future. At least that's how I see it. Now, I had asked you if the Democratic Party can be saved, and your general reply was that it can, but do you think, so I'm going to kind of change that question up a bit, do you think the Democrats in their current centrist corporate form are powerful enough or organized enough to stop the Republicans?
Hell no.
They're not even thinking about it.
They're not even trying. All they want to talk about is Russia. The American people don't care about that. You go out onto the street and ask them, what do you care about?
Yeah.
You will not hear Russia.
Nobody
cares.
You
hear, I don't know how I'm going to pay for my mortgage. I got this medical bill. I can't afford my mother's prescription.
Yeah.
You know, she's doing very poorly. My third child is about to go to college.
Yeah.
The other two can't find jobs.
Yeah.
And my father, on a single income, bought a home, bought a car, took us on vacation, and retired with dignity. I don't even know how I'm going to retire.
Yeah.
They give me a 401k. My children won't even know what pensions are, you know, let alone Social Security.
And how many times did you hear this story over and over on the both campaign trails?
Just
economic uncertainty and that fear.
Yeah, and it's not just campaigning either. You know, this was what I saw as a social worker day in and day out. That's why I ran. But I also knew people personally who were going through these struggles, like a healthcare bill. You know, we had a friend, Pez, in college, broke his leg. Mm-hmm. Still paying those bills off.
Still paying them.
Still paying those bills.
12 years later. Yeah. Unbelievable. Unacceptable. That's where we're at now. I mean, and I think that's the big problem with the Democrats. But I'm excited because when we were undergrads, right, people would look at us sideways. And we would, because if we talked bad about the Democrats, it automatically meant you were a Republican, you were in George W. Bush's camp, you were helping them out, you're a bad guy. Now we have people like you, people like Cortez. It is common practice for people to talk about openly about how corrupt the Democratic Party establishment is. I mean, and they can't even hide it, right? So it's never this argument of, oh, they're not corrupt. It's always, well, you just don't understand how things work, right? It's this really weird, defense that a lot of them a lot of people just turn to.
Yeah, people see politics as a game, but the lives of people are not a game.
It's not a game.
You know, it's not. It's enough with this, you know, I'll do this if you do that type of thing. You know, we're at that critical moment. And this is not about purity or anything like that. I get this all the time. Yeah. Oh, you know, you're demanding that this candidate supports Medicare for all, tuition free. No, this is an integrity issue. This is what the American people want. This is what they deserve. And you, as a leader, as someone running for office, have a responsibility to speak the truth. And I know many Democrats know this stuff. They've admitted to me, yeah, this is great, but I can't do this because my donors will feel some type of way. We won't win on these issues.
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about? Democratic socialist in New York made it happen. A Democratic socialist who ran for U.S. Presidency made it happen. A Democratic socialist in Virginia made it happen.
Yeah.
You know, so the tides are turning, and we will fight forward whether you join us or not. But the fact is, the time is getting very limited with the stakes being very high. So it's this moment in history that we have to really flip the house with the right people and the right message and the right values.
I think one of the great inventions of humankind, up there with fire and the wheel, right, and the lever, are internet memes, right? Yeah. I saw this internet meme today as I was prepping these questions for you, and it was it was the typical, like, politician says, you know, that issue is too, it's too controversial. And the translation is, the people want it, but my donors don't. That's controversial, right? People want health care. People want access to education. People want clean air. People want clean drinking water. Go talk to the people of Flint. Go talk to people in Puerto Rico, people after Hurricane Katrina, people in Texas. That's what they want. They don't care about, like you said, they don't care about Russia. They don't care about any of the nonsense. They just want what's best for them and for their families, and they want economic certainty. And I think that that's not a lot to ask for. I believe I had sent you a text when you were away on vacation. It was a clip from that clown Sean Hannity where he posted Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's her campaign points, which are of course very similar to yours. You did it first. You were the original. You were the original. But it was like the horror of socialism, and it's like, you know, access to healthcare, access to education, job training, clean drinking water, clean air. I mean, this is the horror of socialism that I'm thankful and I'm happy that idea of socialism is starting to fade away. The one good thing about the millennials, especially the younger ones, the ones much younger than us, is they didn't grow up during the Soviet Union.
Right.
And for me, I think Soviet Union, I think the bad guy pro wrestlers, Ivan Drago from Rocky, right. Like these evil, unfeeling, cold machine people. But that idea doesn't exist in the psyche of millions of young people. Like we're finally at a point where we can have open conversations about democracy and socialism. It's definitely a plus.
It was the same thing, you know, with the Iran deal. You have people who grew up seeing the Shah and the Iran revolution, and we got a whole bunch of younger folks who are like, hey, we need to do this. I mean, when I went to Menendez and Booker's office to make sure that they signed on to it, Booker signed on to it. Menendez did it.
Of course.
And Booker did it when there were enough people anyway, so yeah. It didn't make a difference. But
Booker has his finger on the pulse.
Yes, indeed. And so, you know, for us young people, we want world peace.
Yeah.
And in fact, the people I went with, they're all older people too, and they want peace. And
yeah.
These ideas, if I may go back to, you know, you speaking about these socialistic ideas that even they called, forget about calling Barack Obama a socialist. They called FDR a socialist, and he actually acted like one with Social Security and all that stuff. But to that point, you know, I remember knocking on those doors in 2016 and meeting those Trump voters in 2016. They had the lawn sign, the bumper sticker. You ring the doorbell, they got the Trump shirt on too.
MAGA hat. Yeah, they got it all.
And so, you know, you do your 30-second elevator pitch about who you are, why you're running. They don't care about any of that. They care if you're a Democrat or a Republican.
Party identification is big, yeah.
Yep. And I say Democrat, they say not interested, get off my property, or they shut the door. And before you know, you let them go, because in the state of New Jersey, it's tough getting people at the door. You know, people are busy with their lives.
You can't be bothered in New Jersey.
Yeah, you cannot be bothered. So I say, how do you feel about the role of money corrupting politics? How do you feel about paying taxes into a system that is rigged against you? How do you feel about Paul Ryan privatizing Social Security and Medicare, or Chris Christie, who was the governor at the time, who was gutting your pensions?
Yeah.
Guess what?
Now they care.
They all turn into socialists by the end of that conversation. 7 out of 10 of them by the end would say, you got my vote, or I'll consider voting for you.
Dang.
These are Trump voters, you know. And this was seen over and over, you know, that issue of corruption and big money rigging our system. You know, the Tea Party folks, they care about it. You know, people on left care about it. Everybody cares about these issues. And if you go out sincerely and speak about them, that's the movement we got to build. That's how we unify people, not with this Russia nonsense. Let's talk about the issues that would create the long-term change we desperately need.
Yeah, how do we even hold Russia accountable? More sanctions, right? Like, how did that work with Cuba? How have sanctions worked with Cuba for 60 years?
60, yeah.
Yeah, come on. Let me ask you another question. We'll take a quick turn, and this one's a little bit more, I would say it's a little bit more lighthearted. What's it like to receive the nomination and run for Congress?
It's a awesome experience in retrospect to okay. think about. At the moment, you know, it's like, all right, whatever.
You couldn't dwell on it.
Yeah, you can't dwell on it. You got to see what you're doing that day, at the next hour.
Yeah.
You just keep on working. And in fact, I didn't get nervous or really think about it much. You just knock on as many doors as you can, speak to as many people, do as much events as you can. And I got nervous a few hours before, you know, the polls started, came to a close. It's yeah. like, oh man, could I do more? You know?
Yeah.
And at that point, you really can't.
You can't let that get yeah. to you, because you're always going to be asking yourself, what could I, should have, what could I have done? What
indeed.
Should I have done?
But I think for the movement, the progressive movement here in the nation, mm-hmm. and specifically here in New Jersey, you know, nobody expected a brown-skinned, bearded, millennial social worker who was supporting Senator Sanders to get as far as we did. And so when those people came through, you know, our campaign office door, those people who posted on Facebook or sent you messages or whatever it is that they get in touch with you through, that's what was captivating. Because everybody's like, you're an inspiration, you know. I want to run for office one day.
That's
you
amazing.
Know? And
thousands of people, buddy.
Yeah, and you know, you see those people when you're at an event and you get on stage, and those people, they're desperate for change.
Mm.
And you have at that moment the ability to speak to the issues in a sincere and honest way. And the politicians who do not do that,
they prey on that desperation.
Yeah, yeah,
Trump
yeah,
preyed on that
yep,
desperation.
Exactly. And I can't think of anything more unpatriotic than that. So, you know, I thought, now thinking about it, it's just such an awesome thing to see your name on a ballot, but also to be able to speak to those issues and build a movement. And places where I go now, you know, I go down to, you know, the corner store to pick up something real quick.
You're a local celebrity.
Yeah, and people, you know, they're looking at their phone and then they look at me and they're like, oh, are you Peter Jacob? And I'm like, yeah, you know, you get a little nervous.
Yeah, you don't know who's out there.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
No fear, brother,
yeah,
no fear.
Yeah. But it's cool. And they're like, oh, could I take a selfie with you? It's like, yeah, I'm not running for office. Like, yeah,
let me ask you this. A lot of people came through your door. What were the demographics of your supporters? Was it more homogenous, or was it like a sampling of the people of the 7th and of New Jersey in general?
I'd say, you know, it's as diverse as New Jersey gets. You know, we had young people, older people, people of every shade that exists come through our doors, get involved. High school kids, middle schoolers going to high school with their parents, coming in, making those phone calls, going out, asking for, you know, their code to go out and download their
voter. High school kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. To go out and knock on those doors. And it was just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, this, it represented America. Our campaign represented the diversity in America, as well as the diversity in political thought. We had people who were Republicans, people who were very left, Green Party folks, everybody who got involved in this movement. And that's what it was. It wasn't just a campaign. It was a movement.
It's a movement.
That's what I was proud about. And it wasn't about Peter Jacob. I was just, I suppose, the pretty face that smiles.
Very pretty.
But it was about the issues. And that is why I think so many people gravitated towards our movement, which was unlike any other at the time in the tri-state area.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I mean, you were doing it 2-3 years ago. Now it's kind of like we see Cory Booker talking about universal health care. There's Democrats talking about it. They didn't want to make a move until it became popular, right? Like, what always cracks me up about Obama was when everybody was loving the fact how he, quote, evolved on gay marriage. The facts didn't change about gay people. The facts didn't change about gay marriage. The only thing that changed was the zeitgeist, right?
Right?
How people saw gay marriage. And then he finally comes out about it. And that's the thing that always frustrates me with these leaders is you have to lead, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes being a leader is putting yourself out there and making yourself a target, and then being the target of derision, which is this, that's my classy segue. What was it like dealing with the negatives, right? Racism, sarcasm, the eye rolls, indifference. I remember the one time I was with you and I tried to talk to the woman about your campaign, and she said she never registered to vote because she doesn't want to do jury duty. And I was flabbergasted trying to hear that. I think it kind of short-circuited me for a moment. But how do you deal with the negativity? Because you are a man of color in America. You are a man of color in Trump's America. You have a beard. You're South Asian. What's it like? How do you deal with the negativity, Peter?
The peak of it during the campaign in 2016 was when the swastikas were drawn at my house, and that was, you know, it was
disgusting.
Disgusting, unacceptable, un-American, just ridiculous that something like that happens in a diverse town, in a diverse state like New Jersey, or anywhere for that fact. You know, we fought against this kind of fascism and racism. And to go around and do something like that, and the very ignorance of it, you know, they thought they were offending me, which it is inherently offensive. But they thought I was...
They're cowards.
Yeah. They thought I was Jewish.
Yeah.
Too. You know, I come from a Christian family, for goodness sake, you know. And I think also, you know, the thing about that was you were able to talk about issues, about why that happens and how you respond to it also.
It was a teachable moment.
It was, indeed. You know, where others promote darkness, you bring a light. Where they try to add hate, you multiply love. And that was basically, you know, as a social worker, that's what I always did, you know, whether it was on the micro level then or on the macro level now. But then also there's other things where people just don't get what you are fighting for and why it is so important.
Yeah.
Like when you say we need a Medicare for all healthcare system in America, and they say, oh, that's too liberal, that's too leftist.
Yeah.
I was like, what the heck are you talking about?
Yeah. Everybody in the world does it.
Yeah. This is the most moderate position you could even take on healthcare. Yeah. You know,
the British have been doing it since the end of World War II.
Yeah. And that's, you know, socialized medicine where the government controls everything. And we're not even that left, quote unquote, on the issue.
They're not even socialists.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Britain's capitalist.
They love it. You know, there's not a single person that you could go to in Britain and say, how would you like what those people across the pond have?
Yeah, nobody wants what we have.
Theresa May would be kicked out of office the next day if she ran on an American form of multi-payer healthcare.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what always cracks me up is the way they're always saying, well, our system is the best system. Well, why haven't they chosen our system? Why has everyone chosen? Or why have all the other Western powers, why have they all chosen a government-run healthcare system as opposed to the private system? What was it like? Because I got choked up seeing you on ABC7. What was it like having the community, religious leaders, community leaders come out to support you after the cowards put the swastikas on your property? It was beautiful. I mean, it's just me. I'm talking over you, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you captured the word. The emotion was flowing through me before the word beautiful left my tongue.
Yeah.
To have the community come together, not just have your back and your family's back, but to show that we stand strong in solidarity against such genuine evils and ignorance.
Was it validating? Indeed. Because I mean, you're sitting here, you're fighting for these people, and a lot of people don't care. Like some people, like you said, they just don't give a shit, right? And here are these community leaders coming out and saying, "This isn't what our community is about. We are better than this," right? I think that was that's definitely a plus, and it was cool, and I. You handled it like a champ, and you're better than it, and you were bigger than it. I don't know if I would have handled it in such a professional manner, but kudos to you, brother.
That's why I became a social worker.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing what you dedicated yourself to helping people, and you have never wavered in that.
Yeah.
And that's something to admire.
People have gone through far worse, and it's ridiculous that some people have lost their lives for what they fought for, and so. You look at that moment and you ask yourself, literally, you know, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
What would Martin Luther King do? What would Brother Malcolm do?
Yeah.
You know, what would Susan B. Anthony do? What would Eleanor Roosevelt
say? What are the heroes going to do?
Yeah. And what would Superman do? You know?
Yeah.
And so those are when those things happen in my life, and I have those kind of experiences, not always to that extent. You gotta look deep within to your favorite comic book sometimes for the answer.
I see you're a Green Lantern fan and a Superman fan, which that's one of the reasons we're buddies, I think.
DC,
all the way. DC, all the way. You hear that, Marvel fans? What is it that you feel about your message, about Senator Sanders' message, about Ocasio-Cortez's message? What is it about that message that you feel resonates with people?
Very simple. Truth. It's the truth. It's what people know that they deserve. It is the issues that we have been talking about as the Democratic Party, as social activists that we have fought for, and it's about time that we had them passed.
What do you think we can take away from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's victory? You endorsed her. You went to the city and you did some help. You helped out her campaign. I saw the Facebook video. You were behind her wholeheartedly. What do you think we can take away from that victory?
That there's grand hope.
That there is hope.
Yeah, not just for the Democratic Party or any political party, but for our nation. That a person who just a year ago, or less in fact, was a bartender, a working class person, gets informed about the issues, gets involved in politics, and understands what's going on, and, you know, through a leap of faith and courage, runs for office and brings about change, and inspiring others to get involved in that movement. And when we went up, you know, this was within the same week of our election. After our election, and unfortunately we didn't get past our primary. She was the next closest Justice Democrat whose election, whose primary was coming up. Me and a couple of folks who were on my campaign went up and knocked down some doors, and the response was tremendously great. Also seeing what she built. She knows her community. She's an organizer herself.
Yes, she is.
So she knows what to do. And just the energy and the diversity you even saw.
50%, I believe she said 50% of her district is either immigrant or the child of immigrant.
Yep.
Or just immigrants. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. There's a lot.
And so she engaged those voters, went to those voters that people have forgotten or take for granted or don't even pay attention to. Yeah. She did the work, and these are the fruits of your labor.
So her platform was basically the same as yours. What's it like seeing her receive national attention?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
She deserves
every
bit of it. It's great for the progressive movement, again. So,
Are you surprised to see that? I mean, when was she nominated? It's July, so it's been a month and a half, if that, at this point.
A month roughly.
Yeah. And we already see some Democrats moving against her. Yeah. I know Crowley, the guy that she unseated, she gave this really good interview where she talks about how she wins the primary and the next day has a text message from Andrew Cuomo, right? But she says for some reason, or this guy Crowley, the guy that she beat, he says that he had been trying to reach her for a month. Right. Mm-hmm. So apparently he doesn't have one of those phones where you can just pick him up and just call people. You have to set a time and a date. He's probably still on the rotary phone. But that's me. I mean, I get frustrated with the games. I mean, how does it take you over a month to make a concession call? I remember what you said. You called Leonard Lance immediately.
Yeah.
Right. And his big fear was whether or not you were going to run again.
Yeah.
I think you put the fear of you put blood in the water. There was blood in the water, and you drew that blood, Peter. It was definitely a plus. It cracks me up how these corporate Democrats, the centrist Democrats, how they fight so hard against their own base when these are the same people who have been getting slapped around by the GOP for years. These are the people who could not beat Donald Trump. It still boggles my mind that there are going to be children, well, now and children in the future, who look up and see all the presidents, and I will critique every single president we have. I refuse to put them on that pedestal. But they were, in my opinion, at least head and shoulders above somebody like Donald Trump, right? George W. Bush, whatever, at least he was a governor. To have him be up there, to hear his voice used in, like, recordings and voiceovers and film as if he's coming from this place of knowledge and intelligence. It's actually kind of embarrassing. And I think that him as president, he's done a lot of damage the way he's always trying to pal around with these dictators. He'll trash the Germans and the Canadians, but the guy never met a dictator he didn't like. So I'm of the opinion that Hillary Clinton primary supporters are partially to blame for Trump's victory. That's how I see it. Her lack of a clear message, America's already great, right? So you have Colin Kaepernick down on one knee. The liberals and the lefts love him. You've got Donald Trump saying, make America great again, implying that America's not great, and all his people rallying around him. And then Hillary Clinton coming out and saying, America's already great. It was incredibly tone deaf. Her shameless, in my opinion, shameless racial pandering, right? Did you see the one where she claimed she always kept the hot sauce in her purse?
Yep.
Ugh, that was brutal. Or when she was whipping and nay-naying, I think it might have been on BET or MTV, mm-hmm. She was doing the whip and the nay-nay. Or when she came out with the campaign for Latinos, where it was supposed to be Hillary Clinton's Just Like My Abuelita.
Yep.
And that ended up blowing up in her face. Because my grandmothers were not wealthy women. They were not world known. They were never formally educated. Basically raised as second class citizens. Hillary Clinton doesn't understand that. She does understand what it's like. You know, it's interesting. Let's not even forget her corporate ties. She would give one speech to the Democrats, to the Democratic mm-hmm. faithful, to the people at the rallies, and then she'd go and give another speech on Wall Street.
Yep.
Right? I mean, it was two-faced, and I'm kind of getting away from myself, but because her campaign, I think, wasn't strong, because she came across as an elitist, I am of the opinion that that Trump won because her campaign was so poorly run. I am of the opinion that Bernie Sanders would have crushed Trump. I think he spoke to people and not at them. But I'm kind of going to put you on the hot seat. Do you see Clinton primary supporters as partially to blame for Trump being president, them being obstinate and going along with, in my opinion, this is me, not you, this coronation? Do you hold them accountable? Do you hold them to blame, or are you just past it at this point?
I'd say it was the Democratic Party, ultimately, to blame. Them and their donors, they took everything for granted. They didn't show up in Wisconsin and Michigan, and this was their strategy. You know, I remember in our campaign office, I heard on MSNBC, I believe it was Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader, say, you know, for every one vote we lose in rural Pennsylvania, we'll pick up two in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And you can repeat that in Ohio and Wisconsin, yeah. And you lost all those states.
Yeah.
This was the easiest election for anybody to ever win.
Yeah.
You know, my dog could have won this election.
You said it, not me.
You know?
I was going to nominate Savannah for president.
And she was only a month old at that point. And, you know, you took your base, you took people of color for granted, and we all saw through it. We all saw through
Everyone
the garbage.
Saw it. Well, most of us saw through it. Well, not most. A lot of us saw through it.
And there is something to say about professional class liberals who did not understand what was going on in our nation. You know, we bailed out the banks, but we didn't bail out the working class people.
Mm.
And the last thing that those people needed here, as their jobs are being sent over to Mexico and all those places, is the TPP.
Yeah,
that Barack Obama was putting forward. And the Democratic Party did not see the writing on the wall where a Democratic socialist from Vermont showed up, you know, some 70-year-old dude who was barely known in the country, and then captivate millions, winning 23 states, states that
are... It was a thing. It was an event.
Yeah, and that I don't think would be replicated in American history again.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of young people who were intrinsically motivated to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, they donated small dollars and stuff like that, but more importantly, they got involved in an actual movement. And the Democratic Party, if they had selected Sanders, I think it would have nonetheless been somewhat close. I've seen all the polling where he's winning by 10 points and whatnot, but he would have been president right now, and we would have been taken in a different direction totally. And people still don't see that. Everybody refuses to talk about 2016. There's the famous saying by Jesus, you know, Don't take a plank out. Don't take that speck of dirt out of your brother's eye till you take it out of your own eye to see clearly. And that speck of dirt is still in our eye. And we're just saying we need any Democrat, any blue will do. And so we're repeating the mistake that we made in 2016.
Mm. That's what got Bush reelected.
That's what got Bush reelected. And that is why Democrats lost the House and the Senate in the years following Barack Obama's
I'm of the opinion that Democrats really should never lose. I'm of the opinion, and people will hate me for this, and someone's probably listening to this rolling their eyes. Democrats should never lose. Ever.
Not at all.
In Mississippi, in Alabama, in Texas, right? It's a lack of message. It's a lack of will. How do you lose to a Donald Trump? How do you lose to, a Todd Akin? How do you lose to these people? Right? It's a lack of message, and they are really good at controlling the narrative, and Democrats aren't fighters. Republicans are fighters. Not you. Peter Jacobs is a fighter. But a lot of these people, they're not fighters, and it's unfortunate. And for the record, right, I'm going to beat up on Clinton. I'm going to beat up on the corporate Democrats, but I will go on the record and say that Hillary Clinton is objectively more qualified than Donald Trump. And arguably more qualified than Barack Obama and George W. Bush. She's probably one of the most qualified people to be president. That being said, I'm not a fan of her policies. I'm not a fan of how she conducts herself in public. And she didn't do it for me. I mean, I'll give credit to where credit's due. The woman was a senator. She was a secretary of a state. And she was a very proactive first lady. Indeed. You know, one of the best we've had. Peter, what is the most pressing issue of our time?
That's a good question. You know, it could be climate change because we're at the tipping point. We're at that point of no return now.
We're probably past that tipping point. Yeah.
It's just mitigating climate change at this point. But to get to that issue, you need to get to the money in politics.
Yeah.
And you can't change anything unless you get the money out and you could get the right people in. But I'd say it's much deeper than that. It's a philosophical problem that we have in America. It's a economic, social problem that we have, and it has everything to do with what neoliberalism has brought.
People just change the channel.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about it. I'm going to change the channel and not deal with it.
Yeah, it is the complete lack of interest in our socio-political and economics. And that's the most challenging thing. You know, even I get more people that I show up to the door to and they're just not interested. Oh, you're just another politician. You know, those guys who are in D.C., those guys who are in local government, you're the reason why people do not care about politics. You're the reason why Donald Trump got elected. You can't go out there and tell your own base and people that, oh, my God, you know, if you don't go out and vote, you know, you get the government you deserve. People don't vote because they're actually protesting sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, screw it. You're going to give me evil A and evil B.
Yeah.
Then you know what? I'm not playing your game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a fan of lesser of two evils. I feel like I don't have the privilege to do that. But these people are coming from someplace real, right? I'd be lying if I didn't say I went through a point where I didn't vote, where I didn't want to vote, right? Because they are corrupt. Ultimately, it's about who you're against. And yes, that is the unfortunate reality of the situation.
And so there are good people at this moment
yes.
in time, you know, the Ocasio-Cortezes of the world. Even if people were informed about our campaign in 2016 and saw what moment we were at in American history, I think we would have easily won.
Yeah.
If the same sentiment we have now was existing in 2016, we would have won. It would have been close, but we would have won.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's absolutely important for everyone to not just register to vote, but to get informed when that ballot comes. Because there's people in column C and D and E and Z or wherever else who may be more representative of the values. And I guarantee you they are more representative
they're
of the values.
They're out there. The good guys are out there.
The good guys are out there, without a doubt. And you got to go out in every election and learn for yourself. You know, democracy is a two-way street.
Mm.
You know, and as you say all the time, Christian, you know, democracy is not a noun. It is a verb.
Yeah.
It requires all of us to get active and participate in it. And so, you know, and that's something I always say on the campaign trail, and people love it except for the corporate Democrats.
Yeah, well, we'll shake them up eventually, come hell or high water. So really quick, just to recap, you would say that the most pressing issue of our time is climate change, but with the asterisk of we got to talk about money first, right? So it's kind of like one and 1A.
Yeah.
Right? Like climate change and getting money out of politics, because you can't do one. You're not really going to address any other issues without taking money out of politics.
I can't believe all these people. I mean, there's some very stupid people in office, but they're not dumb enough to realize the impact that climate change is having in their own communities, on their own lives. Yeah. They could look at the basic science of it. It makes sense. They see it happening. But it's the money that they're taking to keep them in office. And when they're done with that internship at the U.S. House, they go on to become a lobbyist for ExxonMobil or BP or whoever it is. And ultimately, for anybody to run for office, there are very well-qualified people like yourself and many others that I've met. But they don't run for office because they're not confident. And why are they not confident? Because they don't have the money. They can't stand on a stage with a whole bunch of people. Well, I'll say a few people.
At first, well, you had a whole bunch of people, buddy. Yeah. Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah, and it depends on what office it is. You know, say a few people running for governor. Yeah. If you can't raise $450,000 to be on that media stage, or president, or something like that. But realistically, you know, your ability to serve your community should not be measured by the size of your bank account, period.
Mm.
You should be able to run for office because you are qualified based on your knowledge, your skills, and your compassion.
Yeah. So I'm kind of going to skip the next question and come back to it, because this question here is related to what you just said. In a world of Chelsea Clintons, in a world of Joe Kennedy thirds, have you seen this guy with the red hair? He just kind of showed up out of nowhere.
I met him at the DNC.
You met him. You met him. There's already, like, Hillary Clinton lost the coronation, right? It was going to be the coronation. It was the great coronation of Hillary Clinton. She was going to slay the dragon, and she was going to be the queen of the world, and she was going to save everything. There's already people talking about Chelsea Clinton. I don't know what qualifies Chelsea Clinton to run for office, or Joe Kennedy. I'm sure personally they're nice people, but as Americans, we should be wary of political dynasties. A name like Kennedy has its place in history. A name like Clinton certainly has its name in history. I don't think a Kennedy has anything to say to me. Chelsea Clinton has nothing to say to Christian A. Perez. My parents were poor. We struggled. We went to the same state school in New Jersey. Me and you, right up the road here.
Represent.
Represent. I'm just tired of the supposed coronation. There's this myth that, like, we owe the Clintons something. Like, what do we owe the Clintons? What do we owe the Kennedys? But that's more of a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer that. But let me ask you again. So in a world of Chelsea Clintons, in a world of Joe Kennedy the thirds and you know, the 800 Bushes that are out there, why is it important for the son of Indian immigrants to run for office?
That's such a, it's a beautiful question in and of itself. This is the way I see it. You know, I don't see when I'm running for office, you know, I happen to be Indian. I happen to be the son of immigrants.
That's not how you define yourself. You're post-Indian.
Yeah. Yeah. And ideally post any kind of nationalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
To speak to dynasties, you know, I see the person. I see what they are fighting for. Okay. That's what's important to me, and what they proved in their lives already.
Yeah.
You know, you are not going to be the candidate I prefer for president if you tell me to my face, we need universal health care, but then take all this money from Big Pharma and the insurance companies. Mm. And so these folks, what's happening nationally right now within the Democratic Party, within the media, within the propaganda that we see of both of them together, you know, is they're trying and testing people out. They'll throw the names out. You know, they throw out Kamala Harris. They'll throw out Joe Kennedy the third to see how...
It's like a sample group.
Yeah, yeah. They're feeling it
like
out.
Like a new flavor of potato chips.
Yeah, because they do not want one person running, and they want to take all attention away from this one person, and the name is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
So they throw out everybody else to see how people react. You know, Kamala Harris... You know, people know that her relationship with Steve Mnuchin and letting him off the hook when he had his big bank that tanked the state of California. and cheated working class people. You know, Booker, they know his relationship with DeVos and
the banks on Wall Street. Yeah, sold out Newark to the banks on Wall Street.
Yep, indeed. You know, that $100,000 of money that came in, $100 million that came in from Facebook, and also the fact that the importation deal that Senator Sanders wanted in a bill from Canada for drugs, more affordable drugs, and him not supporting it, people responded to it. And in fact, one of the people sitting at that table in that personal discussion that Booker invited them to come to, he's actually one of the people who's bringing that big Trump balloon from the UK.
Oh, the baby Trump?
The baby Trump.
I think there's like four of them already.
Yeah, that's what I heard. So, and so they're feeling everybody out right now. And all the names that the establishment media and the Democratic Party is putting forward is people that they prefer, that they trust, that their donors want you to back. But Americans are not stupid. You know, they may not be able to articulate, but they're not going to be conned.
Yeah.
And so I think this is just an effort for the establishment to take attention away from Senator Sanders. You know, I even saw a recent CNN thing that they put out where they put Sanders at 5 and Joe Biden at number 1. as far as presidential contenders.
Tell you what about Joe Biden. He's got really good memes or something. I don't know.
He has cool shades, but I think he's served his time.
He will get trolloped.
Yeah,
he will get walloped.
And I think the only person who could... it's always fun making up words.
Yeah, I made that one up, America.
Yeah, you never know. It could end up in the dictionary one day. So there's only one person, Senator Sanders, that people have confidence in. Ridiculous approval rating. People trust him. And that's one quality that's lacking in every politician. Trust. And so if you could rebuild that confidence in people, that's how you will restore confidence in not just the Democratic Party, but politics in America. It'll encourage people to go out and vote in elections. And that's what we need to do. And I only see somebody like Senator Sanders. I don't even see Elizabeth Warren doing it.
No.
At this point.
She's kind of, I mean, not to diss her, but like, she kind of fizzled out a little bit. Like, I don't even like using that term, but the popularity that she enjoyed 2-3 years ago, it's not the same.
It's not today. The same, because I don't think she came out for Sanders. Here was your male counterpart, mm-hmm. if I may say, mm-hmm. talking and holding the banks accountable, mm-hmm. talking to the working family issues mm-hmm. that you champion, and then you support Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it was sloppy.
Yeah, and we, the people, are paying attention.
Yeah.
I don't care if your name
is.
I don't care if your name is Mitch McConnell, Elizabeth Warren. The people are paying attention, and we are pissed off.
Yeah. What's the best part of running for office?
Meeting the people.
Meeting people.
Yeah, meeting so many people from different.
Can you give me a number of how many people you think you met?
Ah, gosh.
10,000.
More than that. 50+.
50+.
How many hands you think you just forget it.
Just hands you shake, right? How many babies did you kiss?
I didn't kiss any babies. You know? you never know, you know, on the campaign trail. I believe in hygiene. As a social worker, as a health professional, you
want pictures of you getting out just kissing people's babies. That's awkward. It's a baby kisser.
I've held plenty of babies. People offered their baby to me to be held.
You didn't sign any babies, did you?
No, I didn't
sign. Like in the Will Ferrell movie, I'll sign your baby, ma'am.
Yeah, that's only Hollywood, man. But yeah, just meeting so many awesome, wonderful people who were excited. And every time this phrase comes up to me, they say, I want to thank you for what you're doing, for stepping up and doing what you're doing and being who you are.
Being honest.
And that, I think, is just so moving. You every time you hear it after an event and you're kind of tired and stuff like that, it doesn't really hit you so much till afterwards, like, wow. This person and the hope that they have in the world is based on you and the campaign that you're running. And you could never give up on that. That's what, if elected, I want to take to Washington, that I take when I'm organizing, that I'm speaking at that event, that hope that that person had. I remember a young man who saw an older gentleman, an Indian-American guy whose wife was sick. But he was no longer working. Clearly, you could see he was not a mega millionaire or anything like that. He brought a check for $10. And this young guy, he was in high school. He saw that. And he said to me, always remember. And like tears were almost about to come out of his eyes. And he was like, always remember people like that. Yeah. I was like, that's who we are fighting for.
Yeah, I mean, they're helping you. I consider you one of my close friends, and to see that positive energy going your way, and I don't even like talking like that, energy and all that, but to see those positive vibes going your way, it makes me feel good to know that people believe in you because you're one of the good guys. What advice would you give to somebody running? Like, somebody wants to be a Sanders Democrat, somebody wants to be a progressive Democrat. What advice would you give them?
It's the same advice I give everybody after running. Because, look, when you run for office, you're going to hear 1,000 things. You're going to hear, you know, the guy on MSNBC or the girl on MSNBC. You're going to hear Fox News. You're going to hear politicians. You're going to hear your campaign staff tell you to say this or don't say this. The one piece of advice that I give everybody, and I gave it to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as well, is be yourself.
Be yourself.
Your campaign and anything that goes on is reflective of you. Mm. People could do things, but it's ultimately reflective of you.
Buck stops with you.
And so who you are and what you say is very important, and people look up to that. The moment you even slip up once, well, no matter what issue it is, whether it is Israel and Palestine, whether it is conceding to a public option instead of a single payer healthcare, because that's what we need, then people will stop having confidence in you and losing trust in our political system. Don't do that.
Yeah.
To not just yourself, but to the people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, be who you are. Be yourself. Be sincere. And make sure you are as clear as well as eloquent as you can be. To keep in mind, I think one of the most beautiful things Sanders was able to do, and for us people, you know, with our great intellect, having master's degrees and whatnot, and studying all this economic and social theory. I'm a
millionaire now because of my master's degree.
yeah, social work. Everybody, get a degree. You make tons of money. So, you know, you're reading all your books and stuff. But Sanders was able to put it so simply. The top 1% has more wealth than the bottom 90%. Enough is enough.
I saw something like eight people own more wealth than them. Yep. I don't even know the number, but it's some astronomical sum. But it's at that point where it's like we understand how powerful entrenched wealth is now and just how crazy it is. What was the Amazon guy, Jeff Bezos, is the richest man in history, and his workers are on welfare?
Yep.
That's grotesque. That's
yep, they keep ambulances outside of the facilities because he doesn't want to install air conditioning.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Would you do it all again, Peter?
Hell yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You wake up tomorrow, it's 2014, 2015, you would do it all again.
You gotta do it all again. Because, for one, you know the lives that you've touched, but there are plenty of lives you haven't touched. I remember at the DNC meeting people who would come up to me, and I'm, you know, with my friend, and we're walking around, and they say, "Hey, are you Peter Jacob?" And I'm like, "Yeah." You
know, at the DNC.
That's so cool. At the Democratic National.
The same DNC you see in the history books in high school and in college, people are coming up to you.
Yeah, it's. I haven't thought about it that way. Yeah.
Hey man, you know, that's cool.
There's thousands of people there, and you know, you're there, and people come up. Are you Peter Jacob? Yeah, you're that Bernie Sanders Democrat. You know, you're the progressive guy. Why isn't New Jersey more progressive with all those Democrats? You know, you get all those questions. Hey, could I take a photo with you? You know, and so you don't know whose lives you touch. And then there's people who tell me, I'm running for office because you ran. Wow. You did something great. Nice. In 2017, countless people said, hey, if you could do it, man, I could do it. And they mean that by a compliment, too.
But they mean that sincerely. They're not, oh, man, that guy. But that's what it is. I mean, but like you're not entrenched power. You are the son of immigrants. You live in the same house you more or less grew up in, right? Like, you're not some guy coming in from out of town. You're Peter Jacob of the community, of the people. And I think that speaks to people, right? I remember when you and I, we were going door to door, and the one guy asked us, we were getting him to sign the
petition.
And he said, do I have to have a degree in political science to run for office? Like, he didn't know.
Yeah.
Is somebody that's intimidated. I mean, obviously, look at our president. You don't have to have a degree in anything, you know. But I mean, it's crazy. You talked about hope. Is there hope for the future?
I believe so.
Yeah.
But again, it has to be at this moment. People have to understand why we are here. yeah. in this moment in time in America. This is not a coincidence. Trump is not just some random act of evil.
It's not an accident. You know? Yeah.
He is a symptom of a larger problem. Mm. And many people who are of wealth, you know, there's nothing wrong with wealth, but it's how you have gained that wealth.
And how you use it.
And how you are using that wealth. Mm. That is the fundamental problem. And so, you know, if people who are in places of privilege understand that, and I'm not just talking about people who have McMansions somewhere in Hunterdon County or Somerset or wherever. I'm talking about the police officer who pulls over that black man or that Hispanic.
Yeah.
And understands that that blue line and that black flag is not there for you to protect, you know, the poor, but to divide the wealthy and the poor and to protect the wealthy.
Yeah.
This is what needs to be understood, because what we need is a coalition of the bottom 99%, all of us. If the police, and often, you know, we see you, you know, you're working class people, you know, you like us, you get up every morning, you go to work. Yeah, there's more danger involved in what you do, but why is there more danger involved in what you do? You know, like your parents, there's people suffering out there who can't afford their medication. The Social Security and pension is being swindled away. You know, they don't have a savings. They don't know how they're going to put their children through college. Don't sell out your own species.
Yeah.
Be a part of a movement. Join us. Yeah. Instead of arresting us, join us and be with us on the picket line.
Yeah. Because, you're a cop. How do you want to spend your 100 years on Earth, your 80 years on Earth?
And so those people, those students who are right now in college, you don't realize what type of world, many of them, you don't realize what type of world that you're going to be getting into. In an academic sense, from what you hear from the news, sure. But the world that you're about to graduate into is going to be 10 times worse than what your parents had.
Absolutely.
And that's, I'm saying worse.
No one prepared us. Yeah. See, they're preparing these kids. Nobody prepared us, right? Yeah. When we were kids, it was still, you could be whatever you want, you could do whatever you want, and then we graduate and we hit a brick wall.
Yep.
I remember I got my master's degree, and like 6 months later was the recession. Ugh. And it was like, there went all my opportunities. Now, I honestly think that those opportunities were probably never there. Those opportunities were fabricated by like department heads that wanted my money to take the program. But I mean, but that's...
I graduated social work school with a master's degree. Mm-hmm. Did all the studying and stuff. My first job, I got paid $30,000.
Yeah.
$30,000. Yeah. And who contributes... I didn't
make more than $30,000 up until last year.
Who contributes more to society, folks? An investment banker? An investment analyst? Or the social worker?
Yeah.
Or the teacher out there? Absolutely.
Teaching to me is the most important job out there, and the way teachers are disrespected, that's another conversation for another day, but yeah, it's an absurdity.
And so, if I may, you know, wrap this up, mm-hmm. what that point here is, we all have a responsibility to stand up to power. And if you have wealth and you have privilege, it is your responsibility to understand what is happening in this world and why we are here. And to fight alongside everybody. Not just say, oh yeah, I care about black people, I care about Hispanics. But to understand the socioeconomic and political reasons why we are in this situation. And many people who are less fortunate than you are in their situation. Join the movement. You know, the Poor People's Campaign is clearly the best movement, I think, to be a part of. It's the continuation of what Martin Luther King Jr. put forward initially. Unfortunately, he was assassinated and could not continue it further.
Mm. He was terrifying.
And yeah, absolutely.
He scared the right people.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, the right people on the right and on the left and in the middle. So, and it's been brought back through Rev Barber and some other folks, and we saw it right here in New Jersey. I hope it expands. That's something to get involved with. That's something meaningful. You know, it's not enough to go on Facebook and say a few things. It's not enough to go to another rally on a convenient morning when you don't have work on a Saturday and it's nice sectioned off, and you know, you grab your Starbucks coffee beforehand and then you go back home and post a photo on Facebook saying you hate Trump. No, it's about time we understand why we are here and take meaningful action.
Democracy's a verb.
Indeed.
So I only got like one more question for you. Peter, are you a democratic socialist?
I don't like the isms.
Okay.
I suppose you could define me as such. Yeah. You know, let me ask you, for the audience, okay, and for the people listening.
For the millions at home.
For the millions at home, you know, and abroad.
And abroad.
Define your understanding of democratic
In a nutshell, for me, it would be about extending democracy into the workplace, right? Taking the democracy that's supposed to extend, that's supposed to exist in the political sphere, and putting it into the economic one, giving workers control over the job, right? The factory workers, the unions, very much like a commune or a collective. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we work. We put in our 8 hours. Friday, we put in 4 hours of work. The other 4 hours, we get together Friday and we discuss what our plan's going to be. Right, work meetings, workplace democracy, getting rid of the CEO. I have people tell me no one works harder than the CEO. I said, that's bullshit. At any place you go to, the hardest working person at every job is the janitor, mm-hmm, and he's not making more money than anybody else, or she. Okay, to me, social, that would be the first part of socialism. That's like definition one. Definition 1A would be about addressing arbitrary hierarchies, right? Addressing the patriarchy, addressing white supremacy, addressing Christian supremacy, addressing homophobia, Islamophobia. That's what socialism is about to me. It's about democracy and addressing and criticizing arbitrary forms of authority. So you have more power than me because you were born rich and I wasn't. You have more power than me because you're white and I'm black. You have more power than me because you're a man and I'm a woman, or you're straight and I'm gay, or bi, or trans, or whatever it is. That's what socialism's about to me. It's about equality and it's about democracy. So I mean, I guess you're about that, right? But you just don't stick with the isms. But that's okay in my book. This is a socialist program, yeah. Peter Jacob.
And so, yeah, if that's the definition of democratic socialism, that's what I am.
Yeah. You're not in favor of Stalinist pogroms and gulags. And gulag archipelago and. Yeah. Oh my God, somehow Bernie Sanders is going to turn the United States into 1930s Russia, right? Like, I never understood that one myself.
Yeah, for real. Let me say this.
Go ahead, please.
My family comes from a state in India with 99% literacy.
Kerala, right?
Kerala, in South India. My grandparents, all of them could read and write English. Mm. And to this day, I visited my grandmother at the turn of this year, late 2017, I went to visit her. She has Alzheimer's, mm-hmm, and she could still read English.
Excellent.
Yeah. Kerala also has the first World Health Organization and UNICEF baby friendly considered state. It has the world's first 100% solar powered international airport.
That is excellent.
We have courts specifically designed to protect the rights of the LGBT community and the transgender community, and they have policies also protecting the transgender community, clearly written out. Women in the private sector make more money than men do.
Excellent.
And that's just a few things.
Yeah.
And guess which party is in power right now in Kerala?
Is it the Socialists or the Communists?
Yeah, the Communist Party of India.
That is awesome.
In parentheses, Marxist.
MLs, the Marxists.
CPIM.
CPIM. Right?
And this already always existed. Mm-hmm. You know, the people in my family who went to college, along with millions of others in Kerala throughout the years, went to college. My uncle has a master's degree, tuition free.
Mm.
You pay a small entry fee. And you pay for your books. And if you can't afford that, the government will
take care of it. He doesn't live in New Jersey, right?
He doesn't live
in California. Yeah. He lives in Kerala, India.
In Kerala, and by no means a very wealthy state, mm-hmm, a good-to-do state, and we're exporting engineers because there's a surplus.
It's a testament. Like, when I teach my students about power, there's two types of power I talk about. There's distributive power. There's the power of A over B, right? The power that the boss has over the worker, the power that the parent has over the child, right? But there's also collective power, you know? And I don't like cliches, but cliches are around for a reason. The phrase, where there's a will, there's a way, right? Kerala is not, you said, it's not a wealthy state. It's not a wealthy province?
State.
It's not a wealthy state. But because of their collective power, because of their belief in their own community, they're able to accomplish amazing things. You had told me about the solar panels. You had told me about the literacy. I didn't know that they export engineers. That's amazing. I think that that's great news.
Yeah, there's no jobs for them.
There's okay. no jobs for them.
But, there's but, a yeah, surplus.
There's a surplus, but yeah, I mean, but that's yeah, a, but that's like, right. look, I mean, something like, I'd rather have an educated populace out of work than an uneducated populace out of work,
mm-hmm.
right? These are people that can still contribute in other ways. Every society is helped by having engineers.
And now let me add this as well. Now we have an influx of people from Bangladesh as a result of climate change and socioeconomic strife, or economic strife, I should say, in Bangladesh. Guess what? There's nobody with anti-Bengali sentiments.
Either. In Kerala?
In Kerala. It's as if Mexicans were flooding your, you know, your country.
You mean they're not solving their problems by blaming a powerless minority group?
Exactly. Well put. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I never understand that. Let me blame the 25-year-old Guatemalan woman with two kids. She's really the cause of all the problems, right? She's the reason you can't get a job. Okay, buddy.
So yes, my family escaped a communist state and came to New Jersey, and now I have a student debt, and I'm a social worker.
Yeah, longing for the communism. Any shout-outs, Peter?
You know, shout out to everybody listening. Share this. This is absolutely important. Conversations like this need to continue. And we need Christian to be able to interview tons more people, get this to a, no joke, worldwide audience.
Wow.
These issues that we are talking about right now is what people in Colombia, I just visited Colombia. That's what they're talking about. I was in Cuba a year ago.
Jealous.
That's what a beautiful place, beautiful people, and also some amazing classic American cars. and that's what they're talking about there. This is what people I met. I met a guy who was here from Germany, now working here, and he said, you know what? If you don't win, you're welcome to come and run in Germany.
Wow.
I'm sure you'd win. Everything that you're talking about is what we have. You be a moderate there.
You know? Oh, man. Here, let me step on some toes really quick. Cuban food or Colombian food?
Colombian
food, yeah, that's okay.
There's a bit more flavor, you know. This is why we need to lift that embargo so they could get the spices.
You gotta
get
the rice and beans, bro. The carne puerco. We gotta get that good stuff out here.
Yeah. Everybody likes it when they have paisa, bro. So share this. Get involved in your democracy. Get informed. Find out who's running, because the election that's coming up this November will be critical. And it's not enough to just go and listen, but make those demands. The power rests in the hands of the people. That's the beautiful thing about American democracy.
Challenge your leaders.
The greatest institution, as much as we are overwhelmed by the media, by politicians, politics, government, religion, and all that stuff, the power rests in the people. The changes that we see in churches, accepting the LGBT community, and even in politics with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, as you noted earlier, none of this just happens. It happens because we make our voices heard. And at this moment, they are taking everything away from us because we're not paying attention. I understand we're working 2, 3, or 4 jobs, but those people who have the ability to go out and be involved in your democracy at any form, whether it's running for office, whether it is starting an organization, whether it's assisting somebody start that organization, get involved. It's absolutely fundamental. You know, what we are doing here in the state of New Jersey, you know, we have a chapter of Our Revolution, the organization that spurred from the Bernie Sanders campaign. We're strengthening our efforts. So, you know, follow us on Facebook, Our Revolution volunteers. You know, things are moving at a slow pace right now, but we're building a movement. You know, follow me, my former campaign page, still got it up as, you know,
an activist page. Some other people who shall remain nameless have their pages gone and are redirecting to a certain Democratic candidate. But I was proud to see your page is still up and not going anywhere.
Thank you, because nobody's representing the issues that deserve to be represented and speaking up for the people. That's why, you know, we don't just redirect, because we got a voice and people want to hear us. And people are desperate for the change that is desperately needed. So, you know, shout out to all the friends and family of our movement here in New Jersey, the various chapters of Our Revolution and organizations who are fighting to bring about the change. So keep at it. Holler at us. Get involved.
You said it. You said change happens because we make our voices heard. I think that that's clear, concise, and to the point. I don't think I could have said it better myself. Peter, thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you, Christian.
I want to remind you that you can always follow us on Twitter at Perez Podcast. You can email us at perezpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at Modernity and Absurdity. And we are always available on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Please tell a friend about us. Take care of yourselves out there.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and read whatever you want. You take the red pill. Stay in Wonderland.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator. This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
He's got weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is a threat to America. Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda.
No, we've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September the 11th.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.